At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Amazon.com is, of course, already huge. The online retailer that started with books has famously gone very wide. Now, just in time for the holidays, it seems to be going after it all. Groceries, wine, you name it, everything under the sun, delivered same day soon, if you like. Stacks and stacks of those ubiquitous brown boxes outside every door. It's an industry changer, maybe a society changer, too. This hour on Point, the reach of Amazon from big to engulfing and what it means. You can join the conversation. Is that you with all the boxes on your doorstep? Are we going to be done with stores? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from San Francisco is Brad Stone with Bloomberg Businessweek. He is all over the big Amazon story. He's written two big cover stories about the company's growing reach. Amazon wants to burn the book business and Amazon, the company that ate the world. You can link to both at our website, onpointradio.org. Brad Stone, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, you know, it just goes from one thing to another here. The latest, several things recently, but what was it in September? Walmart said it will not sell the Kindle in Walmarts anymore. Why, Brad? Because that's a window into what?
It's a portal into the competition. I mean, it was surprising, really, that they were selling it in the first place.
Target already did the same thing in May, and now Walmart saying, no, we won't sell Kindles because people come in. They used to just have books on Kindle, but now, you know, you come in and you've got analysts saying here, you know, every time you pick up your Kindle, they're trying to get you to buy patio furniture. This is the thin edge of the wedge of the vast universe of Amazon. They sell practically everything Walmart sells or will soon, and Walmart doesn't want people sort of shopping off that Kindle in the store or later for into Amazon.
That's right. And maybe even more importantly, it's a gateway into something Amazon calls Prime membership. So you buy a Kindle tablet and you become a Prime member, and it's the $79 a year shipping club where you get everything in 2 days. And what Prime does and why Amazon is highlighting it always is it turns people into kind of Amazon addicts.
Because what? If it's free shipping, then why not buy there? And they're making it they've done a funny thing going from that 70-something a year to $7.99 a month, more expensive by the month, but still they're doing that. Why?
Well, that's right. I mean, the other, you know, to answer the first question, I mean, there's something is sort of funny and illogical about Prime or any kind of subscription club. But when you pay for it, you end up trying to maximize your value. So what you see is when people sign up for Prime, they end up doubling or tripling their annual purchases on Amazon. They go from maybe just buying books or music or movies to buying everything, as you said, lawn, patio, furniture, or the rest. And, you know, in terms of the pricing changes, which they announced recently, the other thing they're doing with Prime, I mean, it's really at the center of this company, trying to funnel people into this membership club. Mm. And they've created a streaming video service. So if you're a Prime member, you can basically have Netflix streaming or the equivalent. It doesn't have quite the library or catalog. And because, you know, Prime is this gateway into this free streaming video service, they moved to a monthly subscription fee to try to kind of match the same value of a Netflix. As you pointed out, it is a little bit more expensive, and Amazon doesn't have the catalog yet, but it's one of their long-term bets.
I mean, this is one omnivorous company, $8 a month, and on the one hand, you're sort of eating Netflix lunch, and on the other side, you're eating the lunch and dinner and most of the breakfast of practically any retailer in the country. And just this week, Amazon also begins to offer wine.
That's right. And also, let's point out that they're losing money. I mean, they are, you know, Jeff Bezos, you know, just a remarkable CEO, probably one of the, you know, most accomplished living CEOs right now. You know, and he's always said he is going to invest in the long term, that he does not optimize his company for short-term profits. And we're seeing that now. They're in this massive investment phase. They're rolling out new categories like wine. They're opening up, I think it's 49 or something new fulfillment centers in the United States.
These giant warehouses.
That's right. You know, with the long-term goal of trying to accelerate delivery. So can you do it the same day or overnight? And then wine, you know, this company wants to eventually sell everything. And, you know, wine is interesting. It might also be a kind of stalking horse to expand their, you know, grocery delivery service called Amazon Fresh, which they've been doing in Seattle for 5 years, but which you could see, you know, ultimately they probably like to roll out long term.
Is there anything
across the country?
Is there anything that Amazon could not conceivably sell? I mean, we've got industry analysts telling us that they're looking at selling fresh fish. Now, talk about something that you don't think of, you know, wrapped and sent through the mail. But, I mean, if they're considering that, is there anything that they can't go after in retail?
You know, it's a good thought exercise. You know, the one thing that is really one of their greatest challenges right now, though, is digital. I mean, we mentioned that they've got this great Kindle brand. They've been trying to extend it into the tablet space to really – you know, protect their media businesses, you know, not just books, but music and movies. And look, there are some big incumbents there. I mean, Apple and the iPad is dominating, really, the versatile tablet category. You know, Google is there trying to make inroads, subsidizing its own devices. And Google owns the platform, you know, Android, that Amazon uses. So, you know, Amazon could probably ultimately sell everything. It has a great business even selling computer infrastructure. But it's at the point now where its competition, you know, is big and entrenched. It's Walmart and it's Apple and it's Google.
Ironic if the big digital challenger, the disruptive online challenger, found its greatest challenge also in the, you know, competing on digital and media. It's not the only retailer that's going to be selling online that is already, that's for sure. I mean, one area, though, that's become more and more digital is publishing itself. And there's been a lot of controversy there. I mean, bookstores forever have had to duck and deeply cover and shutter their windows, borders, and many more. What's the latest on the publishing front and the combat with the publishing industry, Brad?
Right. I mean, and first, let's put it all in context. You know, music, video. I mean, all of the media industries, magazines, newspapers have been going through this transition. Some have been more uncomfortable than most. And since the Kindle e-reader was introduced 5 years ago, it's been the turn of the book industry. And you know, Amazon has competed aggressively. The latest of over the last year, it spun up its own publishing imprints. It's had a sort of self-publishing tool for a couple of years, but over the last year, really a major publishing effort in New York trying to publish big authors. And it hasn't had a lot of success, but it has created a lot of anxiety because the big publishers and some of the bookstores are thinking, you know, they're trying to disintermediate us. Amazon wants to put us out of business. And there have been a lot of frictions with the Barnes and Nobles of the world refusing to carry Amazon's own published books.
So talk about wild ambition. Retail. This is not just selling books. This is actually chewing your way upstream to become a publisher yourself, not just putting the retailer potentially out of business, but the very public, the random houses and all these, you're playing in the airspace or trying to there.
That's right. And what Amazon's trying to do, you know, to its credit is to innovate and to push the ball forward in publishing. So, you know, I'll give you one example. They own an audio book company called Audible. And of course they have the Kindle, and you know, a dream of most readers, what I'd love is to be able to read a book at night and the next morning pick up that same book in my car as I drive to work as an audiobook at the same place where I stopped. Well, you know, publishers want to protect their models, you know, obviously, and you can understand that. And Amazon wants to push ahead and make that seamless. And so they just announced something similar with their latest Kindle. And one of the reasons I think they're starting their own publishing effort is to be able to have the flexibility to do that with its own content. And also, naturally, that is viewed as a threat.
We're going to look right across the retail landscape. It is amazing how many sectors are now under fire from Amazon here, getting gobbled up. People talking about the slow-motion crack-up of Best Buy, Circuit City already gone. Let's go to the old original Target here, bookstore. Liza Bernard joins us right now from Norwich, Vermont, co-owner for 18 years of Norwich Bookstore, an independent bookstore. Liza, thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
What's it like as a small, independent, excellent bookstore, but an independent, to compete with Amazon?
Well, it's a challenge. We have such a completely different business model that in some ways you're talking apples and oranges, and yet Amazon's goal is to basically put us out of business. And our goal is to sell books and share ideas and celebrate the crafting of words and paragraphs into whole stories.
Mm.
It's just, it's a different world to be an independent bookselling than to be just trying to push out bunches of paper and digital code.
So, I mean, on the one hand, you're celebrating all that's there in literature. On the other, what, do you see them being one to be the store of the earth?
Well, they'd like to be the store of the earth, but there's more to retailing than just pushing a product out the door. And that's one of the things that I think independent booksellers and wine sellers and other retailers are trying to convey, is that there's a value added to supporting or visiting even the local independent retailers.
Give us an example of how you do that there in Norwich, Liza.
Well, we are one of the gathering places in town. It's a small village, and we're a place that people come when there's great tragedy, when there's great joy. We had, you know, 9/11, we had a store full of people needing to talk. When our local girl won the gold medal in the Olympics, we had a store full of people wanting to celebrate.
Yep.
So there's that just being here, that if we go out of business, those gathering places start to disappear. But there's also, in terms of literature, we're the place that hosts author events. We have local poets like Cynthia Huntington, who's a finalist National Book Award, and Jack Beatty, who you know.
Great, yes.
And self-published people, local authors who are self-published, they all can have a time on the podium with an audience of, you know, 50-some-odd people, getting to meet them and learn about their books. That doesn't happen with an online retailer.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Amazon.com reaching even more deeply, aggressively into retail, going after it all, essentially, and just in time for the holidays. Brad Stone is with us from San Francisco today, technology writer for Bloomberg Businessweek. He has written wide and deep on the ambition, the scale of Amazon.com. Liza Bernard is with us for a few more minutes here from Norwich, Vermont, co-owner for 18 years of Norwich Bookstore, an independent bookstore. They survive and thrive looking to their particular niche, but even there, it is not easy, and the competition online is fierce. Brad, Liza, let me go right to our callers. Nancy from Manchester, Vermont, just down the way from Liza. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what's your experience?
Well, I've been in business for 21 years. I own Alducci's Italian Pantry. We're a specialty food store in Manchester, Vermont.
Okay.
And recently our town has been undergoing a renaissance where we used to be an outlet town, and now most of the outlets are history. But I find that being in business for 21 years, I see that people are trending towards buying cheaper and not coming into shops, and people come in all the time and say, what should we put in town? What should we do? And, you know, with all of the Amazons and the Walmarts and Targets and everybody's doing shopping online, it makes it very difficult. I go into the supermarket and I see things that I've been selling for years. Now the supermarkets are carrying that, and they're $2 or $3 cheaper. So why would people want to come to my independent store? I have 19 people that work for us, and I say, well, you know, if people stop coming in, what do I do with my staff?
So how do you see the future, Nancy? Big box stores, the ones that can survive, and Amazon, and that's it?
It's scary. It's really scary. I mean, being in business for 21 years, we should have something going for us, but how do you fight the big stores? How do you, you know, compete with them?
Nancy, let us pick it all up. I appreciate your call right there, and good luck with your specialty food store there. Liza, here's an online comment from Jim. He says, of Amazon, they're certainly killing the big guys. Niche specialty retail can survive, though, between their Tyrannosaurus toes, but only if we're nimble. He goes on to say, full disclosure, I hate them with the white-hot passion of 1,000 exploding suns and still sell stuff on Amazon Marketplace, where a lot of retailers do business. Too, Liza, can you really be nimble enough, Liza, when they've got if they've got in your neighborhood same day delivery and all the rest? Can you still do it?
Well, I believe we can because I believe it's more than just being nimble and same-day delivery. I think it's taking a look at the long term. With books, if there's only one bookseller on the planet, that bookseller has way too much concentrated control and power. And I think that the people who value literature and books don't want to see that happen. And so if they look long-term, they will support their independent stores. And I think that's true in other retail sectors as well.
Well, I mean, what's the business face of that, though? When you say that your bookstore, independent bookstore, serves as a kind of, it's commercial, but it's also a community center, a gathering place. Is it hard to make money being a gathering place? Or do the sales come with that?
Well, yes and no. The sales do come with it when people understand that if they don't support us with their book purchases, we'll no longer be here. And if they value our presence, which the townspeople in the community seem to do, then they do make their choice. I mean, we do all have choices whether we push the button online or whether we walk into a store. Now, the other thing is that we do have a website where you can shop at 3 o'clock in the morning at norwichbookstore.com as well as you can at the giant retailer. And you can buy e-books from us and you can buy e-readers from us.
Does Amazon do your fulfillment, Liza? Do they fulfill those orders? No.
No.
Okay,
absolutely not.
Okay.
In fact, sorry. Yeah. In fact, Amazon won't allow us to sell books to their Kindle. They also control that platform.
Yeah.
We can sell e-books to any other platform.
But not theirs. What about their imprint? Will you carry it, what they've published in your store? Do you?
I will carry a book that is special ordered. I'm not going to go out and make a stack of it on my front table.
Well, Josh in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks for calling, Josh. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. I am a full-time employee and working on my master's degree.
Great.
And I have an Amazon Kindle. And if I'm buying books for school, I almost exclusively buy them on Amazon just because it's the best deal most of the time. However, I have some good friends that own a bookstore in town, and so you know, when I've got to buy physical copies of things, I try my best to buy them from them, especially if it has to do with work and we need them in bulk, things like that.
And why do you do that? Why do you buy from your local store?
Basically because we love them and we want them to continue to survive. I mean, they're great people. I work for a church, and so it's a great ministry that they have. They're putting books out, and they give us as close a deal as they can. They're very gracious to us, and you know, it's not ever quite as cheap as you can get it on Amazon, but, you know, in that case, we will buy them there.
But your textbooks, when you're off working on that master's, they come from Amazon, and you're doing the other, in a way, out of the goodness of your heart or your appreciation of what they bring to the community. Josh, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more, if I may. Arthur in Somerville, Massachusetts. Arthur, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
All right. What do you think?
I have to be honest and confess, I'm an Amazon junkie. My wife and I use Amazon for everything. And in the end, the customer kind of benefits in the sense that we get the best price for whatever we're looking for.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate that so many people have been cut out of the picture. People who are in the retail sale, people who are in the distribution, the regional management and things. But we saw this happening in the 90s with the mega bookstores, the Virgin mega stores, the Barnes & Nobles, Borders. And Amazon was the one who was able to turn it on its head, so to speak.
Yeah. But you're going with it as a consumer. What about where it leaves our communities? Are you worried about a landscape, denuded of shops where you run into people, bookstores where you chat about the books, or that's just the way it goes?
I was at first until I saw what Apple was able to do with the Apple Store. And if your business is based solely off the old-fashioned retail model, unfortunately, you're going to fail. However, if you adopt the value added and the service behind it, I'm an Apple fan. I flock to the Apple Store. I visit it once a month to go get a training, to go get something to help me use their product better. If the old-fashioned way of buying something in a wholesale, putting a markup on it, and that being your entire profit, Unfortunately, that game is over. Amazon's the one that's killed that for the world, so to speak. But the internet was going to do that anyway. Amazon just happened to be the name of the company who did it.
Arthur, we've got it. You're an addict, and we get why. But still, for that real value add, Liza, it sounds like that's the value add you're trying to give there at Norwich Bookstore, and it's so far working.
Yes, and the value add is part of it, but there's also, like I was trying to say, that the long-term fear of mine that if all of the content and all of the product is concentrated in one place,
mm-hmm.
For instance, in 2010, Amazon was in dispute with Macmillan Publishers about ebook pricing.
Yep.
They didn't like. They were in dispute. They couldn't come to agreement. So Amazon, in its infinite power, took down all of the buy buttons
for
all of Macmillan's books.
Wow, that's power.
The publisher, the authors, the agents, the publicists, everybody, all of their hard work basically disappeared in one switch because this was all in one place. Now, that's not going to happen if there are multiple marketplaces. And I believe very strongly that multiple marketplaces are important.
Liza, I've heard, I don't know if this is correct, that some publishers are now actually paying bookstores not just for selling books, but for showing them, using you as a showroom.
A showroom, yeah. Well,
is that true?
This is a concept that's being explored and developed because publishers are recognizing that, indeed, they're even selling their books on their websites. But they're relying on the shops like mine to be the show places for people to discover the books. And so they are trying to, we as an industry are trying to figure out, be innovative and figure out how that can be rewarded.
Still winkling out that living, making a place people want to come to and gather in. Liza Bernard, co-owner of Norwich Bookstore, Norwich, Vermont. Liza, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Brad Stone, what are you thinking as you listen to this back and forth between, the holdout there who's making it work and our callers with all different kinds of perspectives here? Is that the thing that lasts, that Amazon can't deliver that? Come on in, let's chat, have a cup of tea, here we go.
No doubt. I mean, retailers need to raise their game. I mean, what we've heard from our callers and what, if you're an Amazon customer, this is true, is that it's a great experience. This is what winning looks like. They do what they do extremely well, and this is capitalism, and it's brutal. And companies, small shops that, don't figure out what they can do uniquely, whether that's, creating events or creating an experience or, bringing in a coffee shop or, doing something that can't be replicated, you're going to have problems. The two constants in retail over the last century are, worries over bigness. We worried over people worried about the A&P grocery chain and then Woolworths and then Sears and then Walmart. And the other constant is change. And this is a business that, where there's always innovation. There's always a Sam Walton flying his plane across the South.
Right.
And you got to change to compete.
Brad Stone in San Francisco, please stand by. Let's go bigger. Amazon certainly is on the retail front, bigger than books. Howard Davidowitz is with us now from New York, retail analyst, founder and chair of Davidowitz and Associates, NYC, been covering the retail industry for more than 40 years. Howard, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you. What do you see with Amazon's big wingspan here, Howard?
Well, I think it's going to continue to grow because it ties into the economy. When you look at the American economy, consumer net worth down 40% for 80% of America, median family income down 10%, housing, the worst crisis since the Great Depression, jobs are going to continue to be very difficult to get. We have slow GDP growth, 2%.
Yep.
That doesn't produce any job. When you look at where we are, living standards can never be the same. That means low price is important. That means the consumer has to watch every single dollar. And those people who can deliver the most for the least are going to be the great winners. Who's building all the stores? Dollar General, Family Dollar, Dollar Tree. Extreme value. That's what the consumer wants. They want the cheapest because they have to watch every cent and every dollar. They understand giving the debt of our country that our living standards can never and will never be the same.
Wow, but what a double whammy for so many retailers here. First, the consumer doesn't have the money to buy anymore, and then Amazon comes in with its super low prices, and boom, that is a whack on top of a whack.
That's the history of the retail business. You have bankruptcies on a continual basis. It used to be when you go into a mall, there was a B. Dalton, there were 12 bookstores, they're all gone. Giant book chains, Borders and all. I mean, retail has changed. Walmart came across America. They wiped out the top 100 discounters. There's only Target, Kmart, and Shopko left. This is the history of retail.
So what are the options for brick-and-mortar retailers now?
Well, I think brick-and-mortar retailers are reacting tremendously. They're the ones getting huge growth in online sales, including Walmart, Target, Macy's. They're pouring off Staples. They're pouring a fortune into their own online businesses. They're getting with the program. They're going to work with fast delivery. They are doing it right now. Pick up, lowering prices, matching Amazon's prices. You saw that with Walmart. You saw it with Toys R Us. Retailers have got to get in this game, and they got to understand what the consumer wants. Instant gratification, the lowest price, the best deal. Those who do it are going to thrive. Those who can't will be out of business and deserve to be out of business.
Walmart, how do they suddenly become an online sales powerhouse or expert?
Walmart is in Silicon Valley. They've got Walmart Labs. They've made a whole bunch of acquisitions. They're bringing in all of this talent. They're only doing $5 billion a year in online sales, 1% of sales. So Walmart is actually a peanut compared to a Staples and some of those who are doing much, much more.
Online, yeah.
Online, we're talking online. But the bottom line for Walmart is they're going out and acquiring the talent. That's the way to approach this business. They're in Silicon Valley. They've got their own office. They've got over 1,000 people. They're buying online companies, startups. So they're developing the talent to move quickly and make changes.
And what about mom-and-pop stores, Howard? Mom-and-pops.
Mom and pop have got to be good enough to offer something different, or they don't deserve to be in business. That's just the way it is. So, and many mom and pop, if you look at the book business, here's an interesting statistic.
Yeah.
For 10 years, you know, you had fewer and fewer independent booksellers, right? But last year, if you check with the Independent Booksellers Association, what you'll find is there was actual growth in independent booksellers. So actually,
Why?
Because there was a need for that experience. Just as some of your callers talked about, consumers found the need for a special experience that goes with going to a bookstore. That's why.
Wow.
Because the experience was worth the extra price to lots of people.
But you better have that experience there. You better have that experience when they show up.
You better be able to deliver it, and it better be damn good.
Brad Stone, that it's a kind of a lifestyle thing then in the physical retailer here. Not the low price, that's going to be hard to match, but you know, someplace you just want to go, I guess, Brad.
And convenience, you know, if you're particularly with books, if you're not a digital reader and you want that book right away, there's no substitute.
Yeah, but can they really compete on that when Amazon starts doing in metro areas even same day delivery? You know, it's easier to sit at home and click it.
Well, you know, we do want to get out of our houses. And as Howard said, you know, independent bookstores are having some success. You know, I've got kids. I want to bring them and, you know, browse the children's bookshelves and sit there and read a book. And, you know, there's a place for these stores in our community.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Amazon.com reaching even more deeply, aggressively into retail, going after it all just in time for the holidays. Brad Stone is with us from San Francisco. He writes for Bloomberg Businessweek, has written very big on Amazon.com. Howard Davidowitz is with us from New York, retail analyst there at Davidowitz and Associates NYC. Covered this retail industry for many years now. Let's go to Eileen calling from New York, Canton, New York. Hi, Eileen. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, what's your story?
I want to take this conversation in a slightly broader perspective.
Okay.
We're sitting up here in northern New York, so nowhere near the storm.
Mm-hmm.
But this morning we woke up to find out that our internet provider is not operating today for some reason.
Okay.
We can't figure out why.
Right.
But that also means that our cable and our phone, because we bundle them because it's cheaper that way, are not working either. So luckily I have a cell phone and we have an AM radio, FM radio.
Okay.
So the problem is when we think about how big a company can get, whether it's my cable provider or whether it's Amazon, I think there's a problem when it gets too concentrated in the hands of one person or one company, and then when something happens, somebody pushed a switch wrong, all of a sudden we're back to the dark ages.
Yeah, and one person or company or one technology goes down and you don't have access.
Exactly.
That is an interesting question. Let us pick it up. Howard, what are you thinking there? Is there a danger in becoming too dependent on one channel, one technology to buy stuff? At least stores had some stuff in the back pantry. If power went down, they had some product on hand.
I don't think there's any danger to that. I think when you look at the field of technology and internet services and all the rest, it's amongst the most creative. New companies are coming up all of the time. Venture investing is pouring fortunes into it.
Yeah, but tell it to Eileen. She's sitting there today in the without internet connection.
Look, tell it to somebody in a small town that has two big stores and they close for 2 days. Look, I understand Eileen's problem. It's real. I understand it. But all problems are real. The bottom line is in America, we always have competition. We always have new capital coming into new ideas, better ways to do things. Look, 2 years ago, we weren't doing anything on portable. It's the biggest thing. You go into a store, everybody's got a portable device. Checking prices, it wasn't even happening 2 years ago.
And there
we're
it is.
We have tremendous change.
Brad, what about the competition angle here? Hefe writes to us. He says, I wonder where this is going in terms of antitrust laws. That story about Apple stripping, the buy buttons off of Macmillan Publishing products got his attention. Sounds like an antitrust issue to him. Is that kind of talk floating around Amazon, Brad, or not with the other players?
Well, the one thing that's happened in the last couple of years, and really in the last year, is so many traditional retailers and other technology companies have woken up to the threat, the challenge posed by Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard spoke to Walmart and how it's really been getting its act together. But look, I mean, this hasn't been really formally announced yet, but there have been reports that Google is working with a lot of retailers to create a next day or a 2 day shipping service.
Okay.
Apple just announced the iPad Mini taking on directly this category pioneered by Amazon with the Kindle Fire.
Yep.
We're seeing a big competitive reaction across the board to come into some of the markets that Amazon has pioneered and to challenge it directly. So in terms of antitrust, I mean, I think there is a long-term question. I mean, ironically, it was Apple and the big publishers that became the subject of an antitrust investigation for allegedly colluding to raise raise ebook prices. This is a much more complicated topic, but it's why the Amazon briefly pulled the buy buttons off of Macmillan Books in 2010.
Right.
I think over the long term, if Amazon succeeds, like any company, they will be judged not only on what they did and on the great story over the last 20 years, but on how they behave. And, like Microsoft had to in the 90s, it will have to, it's no longer the scrappy entrepreneurial startup. It'll have to start worrying about, how it acts and how it's perceived. I think in its fight against sales taxes, something that we haven't talked about over the last 2 years, Amazon arguably, acted like that upstart and forgot that it was a giant, and it got criticized for trying to maintain its exception.
And everybody's going to have competition, coming up already, as Howard points out. Phil in Norfolk, Virginia. Phil, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm glad I've been waiting for you to put this on. This is my pet peeve with Amazon. I know I'm hearing a lot of boosterism regarding, but Amazon has been aggressive in the anti-sales tax. They put the squeeze on states where they have the distribution centers so they escape the sales tax, where it's not only killing the competition, not only is they've got a comparative advantage using that that thread. So I'm just grossed out by their system. And I know all the other ones do it, but I think they take the lead from the big guys. And people should know, let me tell all your audience, pay your consumer's use tax in whatever state you're on, maybe not in New Hampshire or whatever, but Virginia, pay your use tax, people.
Because we need it to keep everything working. Howard, how about that? Where does it stand with sales tax now, and what does it do to communities, states, and all the rest if you've got online sales without that going on?
I think at the end of the day, Amazon realizes they're going to be paying those taxes. If you look at the conditions of our cities and states, which are absolute, most of them are bankrupt. They're in a horrendous shape. They're going to have to fire hundreds of thousands of more people to stay afloat. I include New York in that gigantic cesspool. With a mess like this of poor budgeting and all of the rest of it, they're going to have to collect every dollar. So at the end of the day, Amazon is going to have to pay up. It's not going to hurt Amazon. Their overhead is low enough. They don't have stores. They don't have all these people working in the stores. They don't have leases to cover. They're going to continue to be very effective and offer a great deal. And at the end of the day, they will pay the taxes in another few years, and that'll be that.
Brad, has Amazon resigned to that? Kill everybody off in the time when you're not selling sales tax and competing, and then once they're gone, are they ready to pay it?
Here in California, they've already started collecting sales tax. I mean, they enjoyed for many years an exception under a 1992 Supreme Court ruling that said companies did not have to collect sales tax. People still had to pay it, but companies did not have to collect sales tax in areas where they had no operations. And Amazon sailed for years under that exception. And then about a year ago, I do think they came to the realization that, you know, with the recession and with so many people, you know, crying that it was an unfair advantage, they started to, you know, succumb. And we mentioned before that they're opening 49 new distribution centers this year. That is because in most states, they have agreed to start collecting tax. They leveraged as much advantage as they could in terms of tax breaks and tax holidays, but they're putting those facilities in states like California because it does trigger the sales tax provisions, and they are starting to collect it.
Hey, Howard, what about net employment of the retail world here? I mean, we've talked with people who work in these distribution centers, warehouses. That is really, really rough, hard work. Running around all day long like a rabbit, I think they call themselves, picking that stuff and getting it on the conveyor belt, and they don't pay too great. But what about net employment in retail if you take away salespeople and add warehouse runners?
I think that's going to reduce, of course, net employment because it makes the whole process more efficient. And retailers have been unable to do the same-day delivery from their stores. It costs four times more than it would cost in an automated warehouse. That really doesn't make a lot of sense, even though they're experimenting with it. I think there'll be a net loss of people, and mainly I think more people will be pushed to part-time work, fewer hours. That's going to be the trend in the future, and it's happening right this second. To make businesses more efficient, to avoid the new health care, I think you're going to see more people push to part-time work. That's going to be the big trend.
Howard, you are Mr. Apocalypse today.
There's no apocalypse. I live in reality.
Okay. Noah in Nashville. Noah, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what do you see, Noah?
All right, well, first of all, I work at a record store in Nashville, Tennessee called Grimey's, and it's a prime example of a positive experience for the consumer.
Tell us.
It's something Amazon really can't offer. And we have a whole staff that is extremely knowledgeable about music and various genres. We're extremely active with social media, Twitter, Facebook. There's a massive following there. And we also have live in stores with upcoming bands in our store. It's something you can't get at Amazon, without a doubt.
So you have to have a lot of personality, a lot of experience, a lot of outreach. You've got to create a kind of an aura, a community.
You have to know your customer, exactly. And people come in here that are regulars, and the staff knows what those specific people are looking for. Even if it's a band they don't know, we can say, well, hey, if you like this band, we can recommend this band.
And what if, no matter how people's habits change, you think you can hang in there with that approach, Noah?
Well, I'm sorry?
No matter how people's buying habits change, people are buying more and more online. You don't think that'll eventually slip them away from you?
No, I mean, there's a huge influx with the vinyl market right now, and our customers are growing. We're expanding, actually, to another building within a month.
Hey, go Grimey's. Good for you. Keep it rolling and hang in there. I appreciate your call, Noah. One more, Buffalo, New York. Jason is calling. Jason, you're on.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
All right. What do you see?
I don't know. I guess my fear is that, you know, just society in general, as they buy more and more online, you know, kids growing up and, you know, they get those basic retail jobs, they're going to lose a lot of those interpersonal skills. They're not going to have a way to move up the ladder into management and then someday say, hey, you know what? Okay, I can do this with a corporation. I could do this with a business. And it's going to take a lot away of those management skills because there's not going to be people staffing stores anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Howard, I know you live in reality. You're an up-to-date guy, but it's for a long time, those, you know, first, a lot of first jobs were in a store here or there or there. Young Americans learned about commerce, learned about trade, learned how to deal with customers, learned social interaction, shoppers the same. Where does that go? Just, I know it's not commercial. Maybe it's kind of a society question, Howard.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think a place like Walmart, I traveled with Sam Walton for years. He only cared about performance. He hired more high school graduates than anybody because he said college graduates were too lazy. And all Sam cared about was performance, people working hard, trying, being part of the team, and he offered everybody an opportunity. I think that's really an important part of the American persona, having an opportunity, getting a chance. There's going to be less of that. You're going to need more education, and all of that to compete as we go forward. So there's going to be less. This question is excellent because, you know, in a place like Walmart, there are hundreds of Walmarts,
yep,
where people could start at the bottom and demonstrate by their efforts,
yes,
that they can grow, be a super center manager, you know, make,
yep,
a couple hundred thousand a year.
Yep.
There's lots of those people.
There have been. What we'll see in the future, I don't know. Brenda, Carthage, Missouri. Brenda, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I live in a pretty remote area.
Okay.
We're about 20 miles from Joplin, where the tornado hit.
Yep.
And our only bookstore, really, other than some used bookstores, is Books A Million. And they have a pretty narrow selection. I mean, it's not horrible,
okay,
but
yep,
it's not like walking into Barnes & Noble or clicking on Amazon.
So where does that leave you?
Well, I do go there because I love being in a bookstore. But when you've got three shelves or three rows of books that are Bibles and just Christian literature and you're looking for art books, which they keep shrinking,
yeah,
or novels, you know, Amazon becomes a lifesaver. And especially when I have family that's on the West Coast, if I need a birthday present out there, I can get it overnight.
Yeah. Duty done. They've got their president. Their president. They've got their gift. Brenda, it's a very interesting point. I'm glad you raised it, Brad. I mean, it may be that at Grimey's in Nashville, a Norwich bookstore in, you know, Vermont, that you've got concentrations of population that are going to come and support that. But for a lot of people, maybe Amazon means less available locally. You know, you either kind of can make it or you can't. And there's Brenda depending on it in Carthage, Missouri.
That's right, and it's back to the original power, the proposition of Amazon, which is that you can make everything available, ultimate, you know, selection. You know, it's really something that the world had never seen before. You know, Amazon very early on could sell almost every book. And now with the Kindle, it makes books, self-published books that weren't even really conventionally available, puts them at people's fingertips. But to the point raised by the music store proprietor,
yeah,
you know, Amazon does have weaknesses. It has a roving attention span. It does not do well in these. You know, it takes a very geeky approach to things like music, you know, with its cloud music service. I don't know very many people that have used it. So there are opportunities.
What about,
you know,
this latest one, Wine? Mark writes to us. He says it's an area where Amazon has failed twice previously. The current plan's no better. You know, it's not Amazon fulfilling orders itself. They're using it as a marketplace, and they charge wineries to do business on the site. What about Wine? What are you projecting there?
I think Amazon tests and tries a lot of things, and one of the remarkable things about it is when they fail, they keep trying. You know, I think that maybe for connoisseurs, it's you know, probably not the optimum way to get wine, but, you know, for casual shoppers, and really even perhaps in a later kind of larger offering when it does roll out its grocery service, you know, wine could be a cornerstone.
So what is it, Howard? Then the big box manages to hang in some of it anyway, then the kind of a experience gourmet retail of one kind and another, and then online, Amazon, is that how it splits up, Howard?
We're going to have everything, but I have one comment. The biggest wine seller in the United States is Costco. Now, give that a little thought.
Yeah.
For all those wine connoisseurs, they're buying them in Costco. Now, as far as where we're going to end up, the biggest trend in retailing is shrinking stores. Walmart's growth is in their neighborhood markets, convenience, close in. Mm-hmm. We're having more urban, we're less suburban. Target is building urban stores like in Chicago, smaller, smaller. Every retailer is shrinking their footprint because it is giant mess of online sales. So you got to build smaller stores. Best Buy is looking to sublet space. Every retailer is shrinking the size of their footprint.
Are they going back downtown, Howard? Is that what it means? Are they going?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You see an explosion downtown. You see an explosion of urban retailing, more and more price oriented, and it's downtown. More urban, less suburban. It's happening, and smaller. Dramatic.
Wow.
And Naples, all of them.
And the big old malls turn into skating rinks, or I don't know what. The world keeps turning, and it is really an interesting thing to watch. Howard Davidowitz, you are just terrific. I can't thank you enough for being with us today. Keep on watching. Come back and talk to us again. Thank you very much for being with us today, Howard.
Thank you.
Howard Davidowitz, Chair of Davidowitz & Associates, NYC. Brad Stone, technology writer for Bloomberg Businessweek. Thanks for joining us today, Brad. Great to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, good shopping however you do it. And shop owners, listen and learn. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gale Rosen, Eileen Amata, Mark Kilstein, Alex Kingsbury, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell. With help from Charlotte McDonald and Arjun Singh, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.